Hello, heroes. As you know, I love introducing new people to role-playing, particularly live-action role-playing, and for that reason, you've probably heard me rant and rave about the game Ghost Court. Ghost Court is a live-action party game about ghosts and the people who sue them. It has allowed me to live out my dream of being an undead Judge Judy for one magical evening, and you'll probably like it too. You can play Ghost Court for a few minutes or a few hours, you can hang out in the audience and heckle the cases, or you can ham it up and present a case or preside over some. Basically, you can play with it as much or as little as you'd like, which makes it awesome for first-time role players. It's a special game very close to my heart, and I would love it if you went to Kickstarter.com and found Ghost Court by Bully Pulpit Games. Check it out! Thanks. Hello, heroes, and welcome to Backstory. I'm your host, Alex Roberts. Heroes, I had an amazing time at Big Bad Con this past weekend. Thank you so much to everyone who came and said hi and gamed with me and chatted with me and took a selfie with me. Big Bad Con is just a really fun, open, welcoming, laid-back, and very play-focused convention. I had a great time, and I'm definitely going to make it a priority to go again next year. Also, next weekend, from November 3rd to the 5th, I will be at Metatopia in Morristown, New Jersey. Metatopia is a game design convention that's really focused on playtesting games that are not yet in the market. Consequently, it's full of game designers and other people who are just really invested in making games better. It's an amazing convention, and I really hope to see a lot of you there. Anyway, today's episode is with Ben Books Schwartz, who I met at Living Games this year. Ben works at a summer LARP camp for kids and teens and is helping to organize Event Horizon, a huge, high-production value, weekend-long LARP that's going to be coming out in 2017. It's on Kickstarter right now, so you should totally go and check that out and enjoy this interview. Well, I actually want to start by asking you about Trackers Bay, which is this LARP camp that you work for. It was really funny at Living Games to talk to a few people who were like, oh, well, you know, no one's making a living doing this, but blah, 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 blah. And you were just like, oh, I do. Like, oh, except for me, though. So I feel like not a lot of people know about Trackers Bay, and it sounds like totally amazing. So just, please just tell me everything about it. Like, it's a summer camp, basically, right?
Yeah. So Trackers is a summer camp that does a bunch of different things. It started up in Portland and then expanded down to the California Bay Area. And it's a summer camp that has a whole bunch of different programs. They're divided into guilds. So there's, you know, the Mariners Guild, where you do fishing camp and kayaking camp and stuff like that. Or you can sign up for a Rangers Guild camp where you learn archery and wilderness survival and cool things like that. And then there is the Artisans Guild, which does very specific crafts like blacksmithing, but also LARPing. And my job with Trackers is I am the Artisans Guild coordinator. So I design the programs, I do the hiring, and basically it means I run a LARPing summer camp for kids. We do day camps all summer long in a couple different locations around the Bay Area, as well as overnight camps during some parts of the summer, but not the whole summer. And it's just a ton of fun. It's awesome. Trackers also does run year-round programming, after-school programs, homeschool programs, stuff over winter break and spring break and stuff like that, that doesn't have as much artisans programming, but still has some really cool artisan stuff, but is more focused on the other guilds. And it's really cool. It's a really great program. I really love it, and the kids really love it. They find it really rewarding, and we find ways to integrate the skills from the other guilds into the LARPing and into the role-playing aspect and mix it all together.
Can you give an example of that? Like, what kinds of things are they doing while they're also LARPing?
So a lot of it is wilderness survival stuff. So it might be things like, oh, you know, we're going to visit the fairy court. So we are going to learn wood carving and carve cool trinkets out of wood to, you know, sort of gain entrance to the fairy court to show the fairies that we know how to respect trees, that we know how to work with wood. Or it might be things like the mermaids are having a really hard time because there's a huge drought, and the mermaids are having a really hard time catching fish. So we're going to learn how to weave our own nets and then present the nets as gifts to the mermaids so they can catch fish, catch more fish. So it's a lot of fun stuff like that where we're teaching these kids some of the wilderness skills in ways that are relevant to the story and makes them really care about them. Because all of a sudden, there's this, you know, this sort of abstract idea of, oh, weaving a net is kind of interesting. But then when you actually go down to the beach and meet this mermaid, and she's sad because she doesn't have enough fish, suddenly these kids are so invested in weaving that net. Oh, man, there is nothing they want to do except weave that net. And the look of triumph when, you know, this 8-year-old who has spent all day trying to figure out how to weave this net finally gets the net together and gets to go down to the beach and hand the net to the mermaid. And she's just utterly delighted. The triumph on her face is utterly delightful and very memorable.
What's the age range on the kids that you're working with?
So our day camps go from kindergarten up through 8th grade, and then our overnights go up through high school as well. We do run, you know, pretty different programming. We have a very separate thing for our kindergartners that's much more sort of they're playing make-believe, and we're just sort of going along with whatever make-believe they're coming up with. And we're saying, wow, what a beautiful magic giant a rainbow dragon. Yes, totally. And we're just going along with whatever they're coming up with. And then as it gets older, we tailor the camps to be much more sort of, you know, dealing with complex ethical dilemmas and emphasizing the character development and the story arcs. But because we do cover such a wide age range, it is a really unique challenge of figuring out how to tailor the game and the storyline that's all in the same universe to the different interests and engagement levels of the campers, things that they will find a lot of fun and find really rewarding and learn from. And it's a lot of fun. It's a challenge that I love. I never get tired of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say that you're the coordinator for this, are you doing a lot of like just straight up admin stuff, or are you doing a lot of game design, or is it kind of incidentally both?
It's some both. I am lucky enough that I don't have to do a lot of admin stuff because we have a wonderful admin team who do things, you know, paperwork and registration that are, you know, sort of the real heroes of Trackers, the extra guild office camp, we call them, and they are dearly beloved and make our lives function. But I do some admin stuff. You know, I'm a parent liaison. We do evaluations at the end of every week, and at the beginning of every week, and if there are parents who are not happy about what we're doing, I put in the calls and help talk to them and explain our program to them, things like that. I do hiring and some administrative paperwork on that end, things like that. But for the most part, it's game design. My job is a lot of game design. I get to write the storyline for each week of camp and put together the schedule of, oh, you know, this group of campers are going to go off and learn this skill over in this part of the woods. And meanwhile, this group of campers is going to be going off and stealing these gems over here. And this group is going to discover the ancient robot over there. And then they're all going to come together in the afternoon and reveal what they've learned to each other. And then during the day, I am out with the kids almost every day. For the most part, I play the camp storyline is centered around a school for magic, and I play the headmaster of the school. And for the most part, I kind of just show up in the mornings and say, all right, kids, you know, guardians, you must go off on this quest to protect these people, and here's what you must do, and report back to me at the end of the day. Good luck. And then I sort of spend the day just wandering around in the woods and poking my head in and listening over the walkie-talkie for whenever anyone has some drama going on that I have to go help with, or, you know, oh, my kid slipped with their knife, I need more Band-Aids, and things like that. And then at the end of the day, I show up and the kids report to me, and then on Friday, I get to show up and, you know, have the big grand finale and lead the charge for the final battle or preside over the negotiations and give the big wrap-up speech. But a lot of the day-to-day role-playing is done by my staff. I'm lucky enough to have an absolutely incredible staff of LARPers, many of whom had never LARPed before coming to work for me.
Wow, cool. From
teaching backgrounds of various kinds of education, theater backgrounds, wilderness skills backgrounds. A decent number of them are experienced LARPers from various different LARP scenes. But they are the ones who are spending most of their time with the kids, helping the kids develop characters and, you know, really engage with scenes. And also doing the teaching the skills in and out of character.
Right. And so what is the most satisfying aspect of doing that work? Is it the teaching? Is it the unexpected things that happen? Is it the satisfaction of just watching something go the way you planned it?
I mean, all of the above. It's hard to point to a single most satisfying thing. I think the most satisfying thing is seeing the kids grow. We have a lot of returning campers year after year who come back. And so I've been working with a number of these kids, you know, 3-4 years now. And seeing the ones who came to us when they were 7 years old, and they were there because they just wanted to, you know, sword fight a monster, and they wanted to run out there and hit a thing with a sword and be the winner and be feel cool and powerful. And that was great. And yeah. I love that. I also feel that way most of the time. And to now see those same kids coming back and you being now, you know, 9, 10 years old, having done this for a couple of years, and coming in and saying, I want to play a flawed character. I want to play a character that's weak. I want to play a character that's making mistakes. And seeing them sort of instinctively starting to embrace ideas of playing to lose without us mechanically or narratologically having to introduce that, and seeing them just get curious about this from watching our examples, seeing them start to move into things where when they encounter a monster for the first time and they encounter something they don't recognize, rather than going for their sword, saying, turning to the rest of the group and saying, hey, let's put your swords away. Why don't we talk to them and see what they want first? Why don't we see why they're upset? Oh, this is a rampaging ogre. Let's figure out why the ogre's upset instead of just trying to kill them.
Right.
And seeing these kids who have really learned these ideas over the years turn around and then teach those ideas to their group mates is profoundly rewarding, as deeply rewarding. And especially some of those kids were the kids who in their first weeks were what you might think of as challenging mm-hmm. campers, kids who are, you know, picking fights with other kids, who are not listening to instructions, who are arguing with their instructors. And we're pretty intense. We're a pretty intense camp. If kids aren't following directions, we will have them set out of activities. We will send them home because we're teaching dangerous stuff. We're teaching wood carving. We're giving six-year-olds sharp knives. We need to know that we can trust these kids. But the result is that for a lot of kids, they thrive. They really, those kids who are pushing on those boundaries, when we establish those really firm boundaries, it gives them the freedom to understand where the boundaries are and play and explore and feel safe. And those turn out to often be a lot of my favorite kids, are the ones who are really challenging at the beginning. And then we figure out how to work with them, and they become, and they figure out how to work with us and figure out how to play within a safe and structured framework. And those kids go on to be some of our, you know, some of our proudest and most successful campers. And that's just such a wonderful feeling, is being able to work with a kid and see them grow year after year and see them develop both as a role player and just as a person.
How do you think an experience like this changes a kid? Like, what are they learning besides the skills that you've mentioned, wood carving and net weaving and survival stuff?
I mean, I speak from personal experience, because I started out going to LARPing camp when I was 14, mm-hmm. Going to a different LARPing camp where I also still work, the Wayfinder experience. Mm-hmm. And so much of who I am as a person, I feel like I learned through LARPing and through summer camp. When you are role-playing, especially at this age, as these children and adolescents, they're in the process of discovering their identity. They're in the process of figuring out who they are and what that means. And we give them the opportunity to really experiment, to play with different identities, to take on different aspects and highlight different parts of themselves. And that is hugely important for their emotional development. And having that freedom, I think they find really rewarding. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of it that is about social skills, of learning to work as part of a team, of learning how to be leaders, of learning different roles within the team, of learning that not everyone has to be the leader. That the leader is not always, you know, that not everything revolves around the leader. that the people who are playing support, the people who are scouting, the people who are collecting supplies, the people who are being the emotional supports, those are all equally valid and equally important things to be doing. And we also try to teach a lot of social awareness. I mean, we are pretty unsubtle about the fact that our games and our storyline has a very strong social message. And, you know, sometimes it's subtler, sometimes it's less subtle. The upset ogre I mentioned earlier turned out to be upset because a bunch of rich elves had recently decided to move into the valley that the ogre called home, and were, you know, totally changing the food ecosystem. And so the ogre had basically been gentrified out of their valley. And this ogre could no longer survive in their own valley that they had called home and had to leave to go try to find a new place to live. And so the players had to figure out a way to rehome this ogre that had been gentrified out of their valley.
How do kids respond to that? Like even just as players in the story, how do you respond to something like that? What was their solution?
Their solution with the ogre was first they offered the ogre a place at our school, and the ogre appreciated that, but decided not to go along with it. Decided that they were not going to fit in, and so instead the players taught the ogre how to do archery, how to use a bow and arrow, so the ogre could hunt and survive in a new part of the woods where there was different things they could track down and new food they could hunt for, and also explained to the ogre that by going on rampages and attacking small villages, the ogre was just perpetuating the cycle of violence and chasing more people out of their homes. And did the ogre really want to put other people through what the ogre had been through? And the ogre said, no, maybe not. Okay. And, you know, for the younger kids, it was kind of just this sort of cute thing of, oh, you know, friendship, you befriend the ogre. But some of the older kids did very much engage with it on the level of drawing the parallels to their real lives and engaging with things that they were experiencing in their communities, because it's a big problem. We were in the
Bay Area.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff should be top of mind. I'm really interested in the way that kids of different ages, because kids especially are often like really strongly segregated by age, but also so are adults really. I'm interested in the way that kids of different ages interact in your camp. You posted on Facebook a while ago this story, and I don't know if it was from Trackers or Wayfinder, of this sort of like big climactic battle that happened at the very, very end of this long running thing. And you had this amazing picture of these two like 7-year-old girls who had snuck into the big baddie's camp, stolen the weapon, and then just ran off into the forest with it. So all of this other like huge climactic battle stuff was happening. And meanwhile, they had already stolen like the MacGuffin, like the big thing. And they had just kind of like hidden away with it. And even in the picture, they just had this look of like excitement and like fear and like intensity on their faces. Like they looked so dramatic. So I'm interested in like, how do you create something that kids of all ages can interact with in a way that is like meaningful and rewarding?
It's tricky. And that picture is maybe my favorite picture from the whole summer. It's a picture from Trackers. And a lot of the time, the kids are relatively age segregated, and in that the kids are divided into groups based on age level. So, you know, the first graders are together, and the second and third graders are together, and the fourth and fifth graders are together. And then a lot of that has to do with how the instructors work with those kids separately, because then, you know, all the first graders have a pair of instructors, and the second and third graders have a pair of instructors. And so those instructors are really working very hands-on with their group of kids to shape how those kids experience the story and tailor it to their experience level and engagement level. For instance, we had a storyline this summer. A big part of the story this summer at Trackers was about previously, up until this point, the campers in this setting had never encountered what they would call orcs before. And suddenly, a band of 10,000 orcs arrive in the area. And we think at first, oh, it's an army, come to attack us. And then we engage with them and realize that actually they are refugees, that the entire orc homeland has been conquered by the Empire of Dusk, who are sort of the eternally looming big bads off in the distance. And we are trying to figure out ways to work with them. But the elves, the elven kingdom locally, have long been defending their borders against orc raiders. And so they say, oh, we're going to go to war. We're going to, we know what to do with orcs. You kill orcs. So the campers, some of whom are playing elves, find themselves caught in the middle of this huge conflict between these two big cultures and are trying to settle things. And so one week, the story was about us meeting with one of the clans of the orcs, who, as it turns out, have various different cultures. They're totally not a monolith. Mm. Their word for themselves in their own language is Agzar. They don't like the word orc. And one of the clans really values storytelling. And so in our attempt to befriend them, we were going to go to a festival of stories with them. So for the younger kids, their week was just all about learning storytelling as an art and trying to figure out, build up ideas of good stories to tell, learning cool skills that they could present to these Agzar. But for the group of the oldest kids, their instructor was an elf. His character was an elf. And he had a really personal history with the Agzar, that his village, when he was young, had been attacked by Agzar raiders and his family had been killed. And so he was really prejudiced against them. And he let that prejudice come to the forefront, and he kept calling them orcs. Mm-hmm. And about halfway through the week, his co-instructor, who is actually one of our teenage leaders in training, called him out on it and said, hey, that's a rude word. That's a slur. You can't keep using that word. And he pushed back and he said, no, I want to use that word. It makes me feel like I have power over them.
Wow.
And they had this big role-playing scene in front of the kids and that wound up, with sort of them both getting very escalating it. And then I had to sort of step in as my character and say, both of you calm down. Let's take a walk. Let's walk it off. And they took a moment to process. And then we broke character and had a debrief with the campers out of character, because these were the older kids. And we talked to them sort of, how did that make you feel? And we talked to them about, slurs, and they talked about things they had experienced in their lives and their communities. And then we talked about sort of call out culture and, how do you call someone in versus calling someone out? And the kids engaged with it really strongly and they really loved it. And then at the end of the week, that continued to build up, and that instructor, when we got to the Festival of Storytelling, he said, no, we can't do this. I don't want us to make peace with the Agzar. They hurt me. I'm not okay with this. And his own students then stood up to him in character and said, you talk about trying to create a safe space. You say that you want to keep us safe from the Agzar, but in doing so, you're not giving them a safe space. Your home was attacked and their home was attacked. Can't you have empathy for them? And so those students then stood up and brought him back around, and he had, sort of his moment of redemption and reached out a hand to the Agzar, and the Agzar were willing to forgive him. And so the older kids engaged with that much more nuanced and complex storyline, while the younger kids learned about storytelling and had a festival of stories and kind of watched all that from a distance and understood, the elf instructor got really mad and is kind of a racist, but didn't engage with it on the super complex, nuanced level, while still acknowledging that it was happening. We don't try to hide the more complex stuff from the younger kids. We just acknowledge that it's not what they're excited about, They are excited about explosions and stuff like that, and big drama. Mm-hmm. And finding that mix and finding those balance points is tricky, especially when it comes to things where we do have a big battle, because often our storylines do end with a grand climactic battle. Mm-hmm. And that is tricky, striking that balance between the older kids, who often are physically much bigger, and having them fight fair with a 7-year-old, a 12-year-old and a 7-year-old are not sword fighting in the same way. And that is tricky. And that's, we're never going to find a sort of a perfect balance on that. But a lot of that is, a lot of how we work around that is finding different ways for the kids to engage, is having it not always come down to sword fighting. In fact, it rarely comes down to just sword fighting. But there are often things for the younger kids to do, like those two girls who crept in and they didn't want a sword fight. So they snuck into the enemy base and stole the super weapon and snuck away with it, which we didn't plan that. That was not a part of the story that we had thought up. Those kids just did it. They just saw an opportunity and they took it.
Yeah.
Because they were an awesome pair of 7-year-olds. I was very impressed.
So when you're not LARPing for your job, do you get to do a lot of recreational LARPing, or has that fallen to the wayside?
It has fallen to the wayside somewhat. Though in a weird way, it is, or rather, it has not so much fallen to the wayside as I never really did it. LARPing has kind of always been a job to me, and has always been, at least as part of camp, because I learned to LARP at summer camp. I had never LARPed before I went to LARP camp. I went to Wayfinder when I was 14, and that's how I discovered LARPing. And then I came home from LARP camp in New York. I lived in California, and I was flying off to New York. And my best friend and I said, you know, we got to do this. And so we started our own LARP company when we were still high schoolers.
Oh my God.
In Berkeley. And that was our job all through high school, was we ran a LARP company running LARPs for our friends on weekends. That was a spinoff of the camp in New York. And we approached it very much like a business. You know, we charged attendance fees, and we had a, you know, we had a website, we had all that stuff. And that was started when I was 15. So to me, it has kind of always been a business. Mm-hmm. And I never LARPed much outside of that, except for, you know, sometimes we would run a game for fun on the side, just for friends.
Right.
I LARPed a bit in college. I ran some LARPs in college. But it has pretty much always been connected to Wayfinder or Trackers in some capacity. Of, you know, even when we were running LARPs on the side, we often thought of them not so much as running a LARP on the side, but as advertising for Wayfinder.
Right.
You know, we're trying to bring in new people to the hobby so they'll come back to camp with us.
Right.
And it is actually only in the last year or so that I've really started branching out and LARPing more for fun. Mm-hmm. On my own, and actually going to LARPs run by other people.
Which must be such a great learning experience, right? To see how other people are doing it.
Oh my God, I love it. It's this very weird thing for me, because Wayfinder exists and Trackers exist in such isolation.
Yeah.
You know, Wayfinder has existed since 2002, and it emerged out of another camp that goes back all the way to 1988. And we basically had no contact with the outside LARP world until this past year, when some friends of mine went to College of Wizardry and came back, and I started through them getting to know some other College of Wizardry players, and then got to know various people who invited me to Living Games Conference, and we went to Living Games, and suddenly it was just like the whole world opened up in this huge way.
Yeah.
That we had always kind of known there were other LARPers doing similar things to what we were doing, but we'd never really talked to them, we'd never interacted with them, we'd never gone to their LARPs. And so now getting to see this wild world and this bigger world is so much fun, and learning all these incredible safety techniques and meta techniques and, you know, black box stuff, and just, oh my God, it's so rewarding, and I'm so excited to be learning all this cool stuff that I can then bring back to Wayfinder and Trackers and start integrating.
Yeah. So I, almost mostly for my own satisfaction, I want to ask you about your Magiscola experience, because you, oh my gosh, I know, right? So you were in a different run than me. So we weren't mm-hmm. there at the same time, but I saw some pictures on Facebook and you were just like covered in chains for some reason. And so it was just like this weird alternate reality of like, that's how I think of all of the other Magiscola runs. It's like this like mirror universes that could have been. So please, please, please tell me about your Magiscola experience. What was the deal? Was it a Houdini situation where you were escaping chains, or were you like chained because you did something bad, I guess? What's the deal?
Yep. Oh God, I did terrible things. The alternate reality thing is my favorite. I've befriended now both of the other people who played the same character that I did in other runs. We had radically different experiences and totally different storylines starting from the same character. And actually, one of them lives in Boston, and he is great, and came to my housewarming party the other week, and it was so cool to like meet him in person after having only ever talked to him online about our alternate selves. So I played Blair Hodgra in the first run of Magiscola, and Blair had some very strong feelings about lycanthropes, werewolves,
yeah.
And as it happens, Blair was very set on ending the Lycan threat as
Whoa.
they saw it. I am a so I have a lot of experience running LARPs. That's what I do, and I have a very hard time turning off sort of the LARP analytic part of my brain that looks at a LARP and goes, what is the design behind this? What are the principles? What's going to make this interesting? What's going to make this engaging? So I kind of went, saw this character and thought, and was looking at all the other backstories that people were posting on the Facebook groups and thought, oh man, people are really into sapience advocacy and standing up for Lycan rights. And so I thought, I will play the villain for them. I will be the antithesis because that's some good LARP drama, is these people need a villain. And so Blair Hadra became a pretty intense person who was developing an experimental cure for lycanthropy. And, I had some very good friends who cared about me very much. And then they all got sorted into Don Obea, and I got sorted into Kali Sila. After having, I spent the whole first part of game, really like going up to all the Obeah upperclassmen and being like, yeah, Obeah, what's up? We're all healers. Let's be in this together. And then I didn't wind up in Obeah. And I wound up totally cut off from my support network. And so there was no one to hold me back from going full supervillain. And I had played a lot of villains before. I've played a zillion different villains in different LARPs, and it's kind of old hat to me at this point. And so I figured this would be like that. This would be similar. I was totally wrong. I was totally unprepared for how intense this got because most of the LARPs that I play and that I've played villains in are either for very young children, and the villains are kind of cartoonish, or they're no longer than 3 to 5 hours. And so there's not a lot of time to develop complexity. But at Magiscola, I was in class all day. I was in the dining hall. Blair had to become this really complex person who had likes and dislikes and a sense of humor and a real backstory. And I had to justify their villainy to myself. And oh man, I got real messed up. And by the end, I was so desperate to prove to myself that I could not, that I was not going to lose my friends that I cared about in the same way I had lost the person I cared most about when I back in Wizard High School, that I brewed my experimental lichen cure and figured out which of my classmates was a lichen and kidnapped them and
Whoa.
force fed them my experimental potion
Oh my God.
on the Pearl in the middle of the island, in the middle of the lake. It was wild, and like the entire freshman class of marshals chased me down and kicked my ass and arrested me, and rescued the lichen who I was testing the potion on,
Whoa.
and cured them. Took like an hour. They had to go through all my research notes and reverse engineer our potion, and with the help of my research assistant, or rather research partner, who she somehow did not get arrested. Still not entirely clear how she didn't get arrested, but I got super arrested and got expelled, and they let me attend the opening ball in chains. So that's what all those pictures are, is me in chains.
Wow.
And I was wearing I had mostly brought green clothing
Because you were
to the
so set
game.
on Den
I was
Obeah.
so set on Don
Oh
Obeah.
my God.
And so in most of the pictures, I'm not wearing my house tie because I refused to wear the Kali Sila tie.
Wow.
And then I went to the ball in chains and the green vest, and it sort of became the joke that that was my house tie. Because Don Obeah has chains on their house seal.
That's true.
So that was my unofficial Don Obeah house tie, was my chains. And it was great just sitting there at the ball, in the corner in my chains, and people would just sort of come up to me every few minutes, mostly to, say like, "Oh, you get what you deserve. How dare you?" And the Obeah presidents came up to me, and the Obeah presidents were both unbelievably incredible role players, and really just sort of gave some vicious barbs. What I was not prepared for were the people who then came up to me and were like, "Oh, you did. Yeah, actually, I kind of agree with you. And if you need someone to put in a good word with the disciplinary tribunal, you've got friends in high places."
Yikes.
Someone offered me a position at Imperial, so I think that's my character's epilogue, is after getting expelled from Magiscola, they transfer to Imperial and continue their research. But then the worst was when my friends came to me, the people who I had cared about, and my best friend Milo came to me, and we kind of just like cried for like half an hour to each other. It's probably the hardest I have cried in or out of character in the last maybe 5 years of my life.
Yeah.
And I basically spent the last hour of the ball just like sitting under the stairs sobbing. It was great. And a bunch of people came up to me and gave me the okay sign, the safety check-in.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved being able to just sort of, like, look up from where I was sobbing and flash them a little thumbs up and then go back to sobbing without breaking the flow of character. It was great. It was a wonderful safety mechanism.
And that's exactly what it is designed for, too, when you see someone sobbing uncontrollably and you're like, I wonder if they're enjoying this sobbing. Oh, yep, they are. Okay, cool. Moving on.
Exactly.
I won't disturb that beautiful moment.
I was so into that sobbing. Oh, my God, I loved it. So yeah, Magiscola was just phenomenal. And I really hope I can go back for more Magiscola stuff.
Yeah.
Though not as that character for obvious reasons.
Yeah, definitely. What are like sort of the key pieces of Magiscola that you're now bringing back to your other work?
The big one for me that totally caught me off guard was the ability to drop in and out of character very sort of quickly and casually. Wayfinder is a LARP which is the camp that I grew up at, where we emphasize total immersion and being really, really in character, and you never break character unless it's an emergency. And, you know, we try to keep mechanics to an absolute minimum, that sort of anything non-diegetic we try to cut out as much as we can. So being at Magiscola, when we sort of got told, like, oh, you can break character all the time to negotiate a scene, or just, like, if you need a break, I totally went in expecting that that was going to be super disruptive, and that I was not going to like that at all. And instead, it was so natural, and it was so smooth, and in a game that long, so emotionally necessary.
Oh my god, yes, yeah.
Like, oh man, that was just a total shock to me, and now I want to bring some of that ethos back to Wayfinder. And I then immediately basically integrated it back into Trackers for the rest of the summer at Trackers, of being much more casual about dropping in and out of character. And that actually turned out to be really rewarding, especially with the children, because then they could just sort of drop out of character and ask, like, hey, in real life, you know, Peter, who's playing the racist elf, isn't actually racist, right? And we could go like, yeah, no, totally. In real life, he just finds these issues engaging and uses it as a teaching tool.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be super healthy for the kids, of letting them use what we call reality check and fantasy check. They can just ask for a reality check anytime they want it.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been super rewarding for them immediately.
Yeah.
So that I'm thrilled about bringing back.
It's really cool, because I totally agree that you think that, because prior to Magiscola, I was used to playing in really short things where you're fine, and if you're worried about something, you can ask at the end. And I did have this perception that breaking character constantly was going to, like, disrupt my whatever thing. But actually what's disruptive is when you as a player, as a person, are wondering about something and you can't get clarification on it and you're, like, stressed out about it. Like, that is much more breaking of your immersion than just taking 2 seconds to put your hand to your head and say, like, is it this? Oh, okay, cool. And then jumping back in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which is really cool. And it's a totally sort of flipped approach than what I would have expected. And I love it. And this is really exciting for me. The other thing that I really liked that I definitely want to start bringing in more was the sort of build your own narrative approach.
Mm-hmm.
Of giving players the sort of freedom to design their own storyline and empowering them through things like the NPC room and, you know, the sort of open-ended props collection to just make that happen. You know, when I got arrested, I just went to the NPC room and was like, hey, can I borrow some chains? I'm pretty sure my character's going to attend the ball in chains. And they were like, yeah, sure, absolutely. Here, have some chains.
Yeah.
Go nuts.
Totally.
And that was really cool, because I'm used to games where either there is, you know, one big central plot that everyone engages with, Or every character has a pre-written plot that you're kind of just is up to you to engage with. But giving players the agency to develop their own plots was super cool. And I really want to find ways to start bringing that ethos in as well. More for Wayfinder and Event Horizon than for Trackers, because the 8-year-olds who come up with their own plots tend to come up with their own plots about, like, I am a time-traveling ocelot superhero on a quest for 18 mystical masks of power.
So you're like, how do I encourage that without allowing it to drive the bus? Yeah. And you are going to be, I think, NPCing at College of Wizardry, right? Which is the original inspiration for Magiscola. So that sounds fun, but it also sounds like it's a research trip for you.
That is exactly what it is. It is totally a research trip. And it actually came about at Living Games, because I am, myself and a couple other people are running a large-scale LARP for adults next April, Event Horizon, shameless plug. And we were talking, we were at Living Games and talking to Klaus and Ben and Maury, Klaus Klasted, about running College of Wizardry and Living and Magiscola, and basically asking for their advice and lessons and things they'd learned. And Klaus basically said, listen, the best way you can learn about what we do is come work. You want to see how it runs? Come play. Come be an NPC. Mm-hmm. So he really encouraged me to do that. So I am going to go be an NPC for College of Wizardry 9 and really see how their sort of back end works and learn how they structure their NPCs and plots. And that's absolutely a research trip for me, and see what lessons I can take from that for all of the stuff that I run.
Oh my goodness, you're going to learn so much. And then you're going to bring that to Event Horizon. I really want to ask you about Event Horizon, because so many people I know are just like jazzed as hell about Event Horizon. And so it's kind of in the blockbuster style where it's like a one-time event for one weekend, super high production values, big budget. But at the same time, it's like very much an American style. And there will be, I understand there will be boffers.
There will be swords, yes. Mm-hmm. There will, in fact, be swords. And it's, yeah, we are doing a hybrid of the sort of the big blockbuster model, things like Cow and Magiscola, but also having swords and mm-hmm. combat and, you know, NPCs that might attack you and things like that, which is basically just a Wayfinder-style LARP. It's really just a slightly longer than usual Wayfinder LARP that I'm running for adults rather than teenagers, which has been one of those sort of funny things about discovering the wider world of LARP. There's the article from a couple years ago that I think helped coin the term blockbuster. It's looking at the brute force design, the blockbuster formula, looking at Monitor Celestra at College of Wizardry. And I read that article and I was like, that just sounds like every Wayfinder game I've run for the last 5 years. That's exactly what we're doing. So it is very much the style of LARP where we are doing everything. We are throwing in everything. You are going to design your own plots, and there's going to be organizer-run plots. There's going to be big world plots for you to engage with, and you're going to have personal plots. It is very much taking the approach that more is more. this is definitely not a minimalist LARP.
Yeah.
And we are having so much fun. Our Kickstarter launches in a few days on October 10th.
By the time this airs, it will be live and everyone should check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes for sure.
Woo!
Yeah.
And we're really excited. It's exciting to have to have hype, to have people be excited about it. This is the most ambitious project I have ever done. And yeah, we're sort of taking from everything. There will be, there will be swords. So there is a little bit more of the, as you might say, American model. Mm-hmm. But we're using the swords very differently than sort of your typical boffer LARP. There are no damage calls. There are no hit points. The swords are tools of storytelling. They are meant to be a prop that you would use in the same way you would use any other prop. Your character has a weapon, but this is very much non-competitive sword fighting. These are our swords are big foam triangles. They're kind of floppy. they weigh almost nothing. If you actually try to have a competitive sword fight with them, you're kind of just going to be flailing pool noodles at each other, and it's not remotely going to be a satisfying competitive, showdown. Instead, what they are meant to be used for is they bounce off each other really nicely, and you can use them for very dramatic effect, for big, grand, theatrical combat. And so in that sense, they are meant to be used as tools of story that, you know, you might, when you, you know, in the same way that at Magiscola, you might get upset with someone and challenge them to a formal wand duel, and your character, and then it's up to you as the player to react and choose how to react to the spells the other person is casting. In the same way, these swords, you can challenge someone to a formalized sword duel, and then engage with them however you want. If you can sort of say at the beginning of the sword duel, "I am a master sword fighter, you have no chance!" And that's kind of telegraphing to them, like, oh, I should play on the defensive this sword fight and play up that I'm losing. And we really encourage you to, you know, telegraph, you know, make it really clear that you're going to do a big overhead strike so they have a cool chance to block.
Right, right.
And that back and forth is where the sword fighting comes in and really shines, is it's these tools of drama. Much like Magiscola, you're never going to die if you don't want to.
Right.
You know, this is a very high sci-fi setting. There's lots of people, you know, there's medical nanites, and there's a medical sort of anti-death field around the whole area by ancient technology. So you might get wounded and have to go find a medic, but you're never actually gonna die from a sword fight without your player consent. So they are sort of, the swords are there as tools to amp up the drama, without actually being a sort of combat challenge.
That's really interesting. The other thing I'm wondering about Event Horizon is that on the website you mention, it sounds like this is going to be pretty tech heavy, and there's like a custom operating system for people's like tiny smartphone type things that they're going to use to communicate with each other or something. Like, how fleshed out is that? Because it's a really interesting idea, and I don't really understand what that means.
So it's pretty fleshed out, as in it's we have a build of the app and all that good stuff. It's pretty exciting. It's still a stretch goal for the moment, mm-hmm. In part because we've been talking a lot to other people who are doing similar things, especially what Matthew Webb is doing with Planetfall,
which
I got to play a small version of at Living Games, and was just the coolest thing. I mean, like, Matthew Webb is definitely the expert on smartphone tech and augmented reality tech in LARPing. I utterly defer to his expertise. But one of the big takeaways from what he told us was that trying to build an app that can run on a phone that anyone who just sort of shows up happens to already have with them is a huge challenge, because there's so many different kinds of phones out there that how do you know it's going to run on anything? And it is a challenge that he has chosen to take on, and I have so much respect for that. We are not doing that. Instead, what we are doing is we are, assume if we hit our stretch goal, is we're going to get a bunch of really sort of a bunch of small touchscreen phones and then wipe them and install our own custom system on them and use them as loaners for the weekend. So for the weekend, you get a little phone that has our custom OS on it that you borrow. And we are lucky enough to be playing at a LARP site that has Wi-Fi, which is pretty cool. And so then your OS, your little touchscreen phone, your communicator will let you do all kinds of things. You know, there will be, you'll be able to text other players in game. It'll have a database of the other players. You might be able to look up basic information on them. You can set up your character with a public profile, things that you are okay with the world knowing. You can take pictures, you can make recordings. There's going to be a lot of linguistics in this game. There's in this space setting, there was an ancient civilization of humans thousands of years ago, and there are ancient ruins in this place, and there's going to be some linguists who are trying to decipher the rune, you know, what's written in these ancient ruins. And so you're going to have sort of a linguistic database on your phone that you can use. The coolest thing, and the thing I'm most excited about, though, is the news. There's going to be a group of players in-game who are the Colonial News. The idea of Event Horizon,
oh my gosh,
is that it's the first colony on a new planet. And so this group, they are the news crew. They're the first news outlet on this new planet. And so they're, you know, they're going to have computers in game, and it's going to be up to, there's going to be reporters and photographers, and it's going to be up to them to report on everything going on in the game. Be running around interviewing people, taking pictures, writing news stories, and they will have a news bulletin that anytime they publish a news article will then get a push notification sent out to everyone's communicators in the game. And so everyone can see the colonial news.
Oh my gosh.
And that's going to be part of how, as a player, you can kind of keep up with other storylines that are going on, some of the big picture plot, you know, dramatic backstory revelations are going to come out as, you know, because the news might uncover some stuff. They might be digging for some dirt on the local politicians or uncover a crime ring.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things that I'm really excited about. And then that's something that then after the game, everyone's going to be able to look back on and see as kind of an in-game record is the news that got generated during game.
Right.
And they're going to be able to see those pictures and have that sort of keep with them as a documentation of documentation made during game.
Oh my gosh. Okay. This is so exciting to me. Like I've played a reporter in a Jason Morningstar game, and being a reporter in a LARP is awesome because so much of LARP design is information management, right? And figuring out like what gets delivered to whom and when, and like being an agent of that, it feels so like dizzyingly powerful in the best way. And I think a lot of like phones are so essential to how we communicate with each other now, but integrating your existing phone while you're LARPing is so weird because it also connects you to the world outside of the LARP, which you kind of don't want. So
Exactly. That
is such that's a really, really cool solution to that problem. And yeah, what an exciting opportunity. What else are you totally jazzed about Event Horizon?
Oh man. All of it. I'm really excited about our scenic design and some of the stuff that we're hoping to build. We're lucky enough to be working with an absolutely incredible builder, this guy Angelo, who used to work at Trackers and is a serious Burning Man maker. And so he builds like giant metal sculptures and, you know, really cool metal sign work and things that glow. He has a fully operational giant laser turret.
Sure.
That he drives around.
Good.
Why not? That you can sit in. It's like you're in the laser turret on the Millennium Falcon.
Wow.
It's the coolest thing. And so he's going to be building us truly spectacular things. And I'm just so excited to see the cool stuff he's going to make. He is, as we put it, in charge of making sure shit looks really sci-fi.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited about that. And I'm just, after Magiscola, I'm just really excited to see what the players come up with.
Of course.
I'm really excited to sort of set them loose in this sandbox and see where they go with it. You know, we have we've done a lot of world building, and we have all these planets for people to be from and plot lines and stuff for them to engage with. But very much like Magiscola, we're kind of just setting them loose and seeing where they go with it. And so I'm so excited. It's been, I have not done a lot of LARP running for adults, and I'm excited for that change of pace. The closest I've come really is running LARPs at my college when I was an undergrad a couple years ago. So it's fun. It's fun. It's different. It's fun. And I'm so excited. I'm having so much fun.
That's great. Okay. Give me like the key vitals on Event Horizon. It's going to be the summer of 2017.
Spring. It's April 7th to 10th, 2017. Just north of San Francisco. Tickets are $450 for a basic ticket. If we do somehow sell out all tickets to our first run, we are going to open up subsequent weekends in April, and we will provide a costume and character, or sorry, not a costume, we'll provide a character backstory. You can buy costumes through the Kickstarter if you want to. And it is a Friday to Monday LARP, full immersion, high scenic design. Your ticket price includes a bed, all your meals for the weekend, catered by the, you know, very world-class cooks at Nature Bridge. Sign up on the Kickstarter, tell your friends, get hyped for space.
Yes, get space hype.
Space hype.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I'm really, really glad we got a chance to chat a little bit more.
Yeah.
It was cool getting to meet you at Living Games, and I feel like I've been wanting to do this for a long time, so this was really good. And
yeah,
it just happened to work out. Like, I was like, oh, I gotta have Ben on the show. And then we scheduled it. And then you're like, oh yeah, P.S. I'm involved in Event Horizon, like, which is also at the same time.
No big deal. Yeah. And if I can throw two more shout outs for my camps.
Please do. Yes.
We also have Trackers has a fall and winter break programming coming up. So if you have or know children who you want to get hooked on LARPing, send them to us. We have trackersbay.com in the Bay Area and trackerspdx.com up in Portland. We do one-day winter break and fall camps for little one-day LARPs. And Wayfinder in New York also has a winter break camp coming up. Wayfinder's winter game is all ages for ages 12 and up, mostly for teenagers, but also adults can come too, and that will likely be December 27th to 29th at the end of this year, and you can go to wayfinderexperience.com, and that's going to be in upstate New York, and will be a cool Nordic-ish LARP that we have not announced exactly what the game is going to be, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you have teens who are looking for LARPing on the Eastern Seaboard, send them to Wayfinder, wayfinderexperience.com.
Awesome. And if people want to keep up with you and when what you're up to and where you're at, what's the best way for them to do that?
Probably Twitter or Facebook. My profile, my handle on both of those is Sunshine Duck.
Duck,
D-U-K, no C in that. Mm-hmm. Or you can find me on Facebook, Ben Books Schwartz. And just follow what I'm up to.
Yay. Well, thanks again for coming on. This was really fun.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks again to Ben for coming on the show. And as always, thank you for listening. Remember that if you want to get in touch, you can reach me via email. That's backstorypodcast@gmail.com, on Google+ at backstorypodcast, or on Twitter at backstorycast. Backstory is part of the One Shot Podcast Network. You can find more great shows like One Shot, Campaign, Modifier, and many more at oneshotpodcast.com. Our music is provided by Ujiko. The track is called Thinking of You. You can hear more at soundcloud.com/UJICO. Talk to you later, heroes.